Hi, everybody. It's The Interviews with Will Alexander, brought to you by Canine Chronicle TV. Today in the hot seat, we have Mr. Clay Cody. So I'm sure you'll enjoy this one. Hi, everybody. Today we have a special guest. We have none other than Mr. Clay Cody. How are you today, Clay?
I'm good. Well, how are you?
Good. It's good to see you. How's the weather there in the sunny south?
It's starting to get better.
Yeah.
We've had a record summer heat.
Oh, too hot. Yeah.
Yes.
At least it's a dry heat, though. It's not.
So there you go. There you go. That's why you dry out and your skin starts hanging.
Nice.
Dribbling up.
All right. Well, let's get right to it. Tell me how you got first involved in the sport of dogs, Clay.
Well, it was really an accident. I was working at a stable at cleaning stalls so that I could ride these rental horses for free. And the people had a dog, an Amortoy, which today is called a Toy Fox Terrier, and the breed looks exactly the same. And the owners of the stable asked me, she was bred, and they asked me if I would like to have a puppy. And I said, sure. So I went to my next door neighbor, and I asked him to build me a doghouse. He was a carpenter.
How old were you, Clay?
12.
Okay.
7th grade. So he asked me what size, and I said, well, about like this and like this. And he said, what are you getting? I said, I'm getting an Amortoy, which at the time was registered by the UKC, not the AKC. So he said, you don't want a Amortoy. He says, you want a Samoyed. Well, he just happened to have a friend that had a litter of Samoyeds. So we went over there, and they had Samoyed puppies at 8 weeks old. They don't get any cuter than that. And I took my choice. And the guy owed him a favor, so I was able to buy this dog for $40. My father gave me $40 to buy this dog. So then, fast forward, a few months later, there's a local dog show in Arizona, and these people showed their dogs. And so they asked me if I would show my dog, and I said, sure, I'd be glad to. I'd love to. And so in the day, the Saguaro State Kennel Club had dog training classes every Saturday at some little park in Phoenix. And I took my dog over there, and I learned how to handle her. And one of the people that were teaching at the time was Dixie McCauley. Now, that's a name that most people will not remember. It's Boxer people. She's pretty well known in the breed in the day, in the 60s. We're talking like 1962. So I did the thing every week. I was enthusiastic about it. I enjoyed it. And they entered her at the dog show. They entered her in the American bred class. And the time, the entry fee was $6, which I thought was like exorbitant. But I showed her, and first I took her to a grooming shop, and I got her bathed, and I got her trimmed. The groomer was an old handler from Glenview, Illinois, by the name of Harlan Schwander, which, again, I don't think there's anybody alive other than me that remembers Harlan Schwander. So he lost his license for punching out a judge in Kankakee, Illinois. He was an old alcoholic. All my role models basically were alcoholics. So, anyways, he bathed her and trimmed her up, and I went to the show, and I had this big box that I kept her in, and my father dropped me off at 6 o'clock in the morning, and I sat there with my dog, and I brushed on her and brushed on her, and then I went in and showed her. Well, she had a far too long a nose, and she's a little bit low on leg, and none of these things I realized. But she was the cleanest and the whitest dog there. And there were two in the class, and she went second. But they also had a junior showmanship class, and I was eligible to do that. And the day you signed up, and they had a professional handler judge the class. And I went into the novice class, and there were six kids in there, and I was third. So I thought, well, that's okay, but going second in the class. So the next day I decided that, which was the Superstition Kennel Club, which is in Mesa, we went to the Superstition Kennel Club, and same thing happened. I went second in a class of two, and I thought, I got to get another dog because this isn't working for me. I mean, I was immediately competitive. I wanted a blue ribbon no matter what. And so I met some very well known Samoyed people, a woman by the name of Jean Blake, who had a, she was showing a dog called Shoshone of White Cliff, and White Cliff was a very famous Samoyed kennel at the time. And that lady taught me to trim the feet and the whiskers, and was very encouraging to me. And then by the next group of shows, I had another Samoyed, and she was a little better, and she could win the American Bred class. Where I really got going well was a couple of years later, this Samoyed comes running through the front yard, and I captured him. And I kept him hostage until somebody put an ad out that there was a dog missing. So I called the people up, and I said, I think I have your dog. His name was Siska Broken Bow. He was a dog from Morrison, Colorado, and at the time there were several really good Samoyed kennels in Morrison, Colorado. And these people were wealthy oil people, and they had bought this dog for their children when they were born. And Siska was a good dog. And they put my name on the dog and let me show him. And I showed him in a puppy match. I won the working group under a judge called Frank Hayes Birch, who some people still remember. Then I took him out. First show, I got a 5-point major on him. Under Billy Pym from Canada. Do you remember him?
Billy
Pym.
No, I don't know.
Yes, he's a very well-known judge in Canada. He would be comparable to Jimmy Reynolds or somebody like that. This is all in the 60s.
Yeah, okay.
And, you know, this is my first 5-point major and first point, and I was thrilled. So fast forward, you know, I was in the seventh grade when I got started, and when you're in the seventh grade, your teachers are trying to point you towards some kind of vocation, and I couldn't think of anything that I wanted to be, anything. I know it was nothing I wanted to do, and so when I got to this show, the first day, I mean, before I ever showed my dog, I thought, wow, these people are showing these dogs and they're traveling all over the country and this looks like fun. And I was just immediately, this is what I'm going to be, a dog handler. And true story, I never looked back. That was my business. Well, it affected my grades in school because I didn't care about school anymore. I'd go to school every day and just draw pictures of dogs or read anything I could about dogs. I had every magazine you could get, and that was it. So then a little bit further forward. Well, first of all, let me get back to the guy that I first had my dog groomed at. On the Monday after the show, I rode my bike over to his grooming shop, and he gave me a job bathing dogs, and I bathed dogs for him a couple years. Then, and he's the one that told me that I should work for Larry Downey. So in the meantime, Ben Brown moved to town. Now, Ben Brown was the person that taught Harry Sankster. He taught Rick Kashoudian. Yeah, I mean, and he was old and he had asthma. He had moved from California to Arizona. And I worked for him. I painted his kennel. He never paid me anything. But he was an icon in the business. So as a matter of fact, I'll tell you a quick story. When you can get a driver's license when you're 15 years and 9 months, and I a learner's permit. I got a learner's permit. I had never driven, ever. I hadn't even sat on my father's lap. So we were going to California, and he was a big, heavy set man, and he got in the passenger side. And I said, I don't know how to drive. It was a three-speed Ford Econoline, with the motor in between, so you're looking straight down at the ground, and it's a stick, and he's teaching me, telling me, put your foot on the clutch, start giving a little gas, let your clutch, let clutch up, put it into second gear, push up, go up, and we go out of town. But you can imagine what that looked like. We're chugging down the road, every time I was trying to put the thing up and trying to learn it. So we finally got out of Phoenix, and we're going to California. And
And you were driving. You were driving.
I was driving. He went to sleep, and he didn't wake up until we were. This is in the summer, and it's hot. And in Arizona, what we did, because we didn't have air conditioning, we filled the buckets of all the dogs with ice, and we opened all the windows, and we drove. And so he said to me, "They need to have air, and they need to have water." So we would go. Anyways, we went and we woke up and he woke up. No, actually, he didn't wake up. I'm in the middle of rush hour traffic in Los Angeles, and I can't get over. I don't know how to use the mirrors. And I started yelling at him, and I woke him up. And he said, I said, I got to get out of here. I'm scared to death. So he looks in the mirror and he says, "You can go. You can get in the next lane." Finally, we got off there, and then he started driving. So that was, I learned that. I learned how to drive from this man. So then,
Threw you in the fire, though. Just go and do it.
that's right. That's right. So things weren't going well with my family. They weren't interested in dogs at all. And I got a job. There's a story about that one too, with Larry Downey. And that's probably the one of the best things that ever happened to me. I mean, God was truly watching me. He was watching over me because I ended up with a couple, very hardworking, talented business people. And they had a little farmhouse in Libertyville, Illinois, and they had a little room in the back, or actually had to go outside to get to the room. And they asked me if I would stay there. And I said, sure. It had a couch that had a bed that rolled out, and that was like a it looked like a roller coaster. And I slept in that bed for 3.5 years, actually 4, because after they quit, I still stayed there for 4 months before I got married to Birgit. But the thing is, with those people and the work ethic and the fact that, and they were doggy, and there was an AKC Book of Standards on the kitchen table every night, and there were always questions, and they'd be reading it and I'd be reading it, and we would talk about dogs, dogs, dogs. And thank God they didn't have any children, so I actually became their child. And when I think about it, years and years later, I could have gotten into in. I didn't know where I was going. I went to Illinois, as I said. Actually, I was not even 17 years old. I started working for him on June 20th. My birthday wasn't until June 30th, and I turned 17. I lied to them. I told them that I was 18 because I didn't think they would hire me, and And I work like a slave. I mean, these people said, you know, you have no self-discipline and you need to work for somebody that's strong. And I'm telling you, I learned words that I never heard of before when he was yelling at me. I mean, and most of them were, he was calling me. So, people need to understand that because, you know, Birgit and I had really good help. And a lot of them are very good. They make a living showing dogs. They don't just do it as a hand, you know, as what do they call it? The glory trail. So I learned how to save money. That's an important thing if you're going to be handling. I also learned that you had to charge regardless. And it was very difficult when you start handling. It's very difficult to charge people because you don't feel that you are good enough. And we charged and we kept it a business. And when Bert and I got married, we didn't have 2 cents to rub together.
Let's just back up. Tell me how you met Birgit and how that all started.
Okay.
We'll go from there and go into
Okay. Well,
this.
Bert actually comes from the same cloth. She basically left home young. I basically ran away from home. She basically ran away from home too. She went to England from Germany, from Hamburg, Germany, and she got a job in a kennel maid school. In the day, they had kennel maid schools. And then a lady by the name of Betty Malinka, who was the city clerk for the city of Gary, Indiana, had Scotties, Sand Dune Scotties, and she met Birgit over there and asked if she would come to the United States. And she did, and they went to dog shows, and we'd be there set up. And when they would get there with the Scotties and the Westies, they'd set up, and I'd see them over there. And then all of a sudden, they were set up behind us. She'd move everything, all of her crates, her tent, everything, and she was right behind us. So after a while, you know, I kind of figured, well, this girl, I mean, and this went on show after show, and I thought, wow, maybe this girl likes me. So, anyways, we became good friends, and then I was off one day a week, Tuesdays, and I would always go to her place, and then work the rest of the week, and it started from there, and we were a great team actually. Once we got married, we got married in 1970. We were a great dream. Great team. We worked hard and we had nothing. And it paid off working hard. You know, we eventually did very well. But maybe coming from Arizona, I worked for Larry Nellis for 3.5 years. Another 6 months after he retired, then Birgit and I got married, and then we lived there for another 3 years. And you know, when you're from Arizona and you're used to 300 bright, sunny days a year, and it snows all winter, it rains all spring, it's hot and humid in the summer, and you know, we're taking care of dogs outside, exercising, we're out there, and it's snowy, I'm out there picking poop out of the snow, you know, it's
Where are you now?
This was still in Libertyville, Illinois.
Okay.
Okay. It just it wasn't good. And I finally told Birgit, and we were able to buy a nice house at that time in St. Charles, Illinois. And it was beautiful, and I loved it, and I landscaped it. And it worked out well. But I said to Birgit one day, I said, you know, I'm going to jump off the roof and kill myself. I cannot take another day living in Illinois, and I want to move back to Arizona. So in the day, there was no money in Arizona, and the drive going back from California, you have to make most of shows in California. That's too much. So again, we get back to Ben Brown, and he found me a place, found us a place in Libertyville, not Libertyville, I'm sorry, Palmdale, California. And we worked out of there for 2 years. And then one day, Rick Kashoudian called me and says, kid, I need you to buy my kennel. I said, okay. Put the kennel on sale, on up for sale. It was sold, and we were ready to move in 6 months. So is it Rick, we're ready to move? Okay, come on down, kid. Well, he didn't have any plans of moving. So we move in there. You know, and at the time he's doing those bronzes, and he's got this wax, and he's got this Bunsen burner, and he walks around the place with a cigar in his mouth, and he's whittling on these dogs, and all day long he's doing this. And this place looked like a yellow paint bomb went off of it. The carpet was yellow, the building was inside, it was yellow, the outside it was yellow. The fence in the front was falling down onto the sidewalk. It was a mess. And so I didn't know that cockroaches liked that wax, from all that wax falling on the carpet, the yellow carpet. As you could tell, it was yellow because it looked black. And the place was full of cockroaches. It was a mess. So, you know, I mean, most people know that Birgit's very fastidious and very clean and very organized, and she wants things done right. Well, I thought she was going to either kill me or Rick. And when we moved down there, we had Marippi worked for us, Bernie Kush worked for us, Doreen Higuchi, who, you don't know who she was. She's the gal that eventually married Joe Waterman.
Oh, okay.
So she worked for us. Andy Linton worked for us, only on the weekends. So we're all there, and then Rick has got all of his employees in the back room working on these molds, and we're trying to clean the place up. And he's got his dogs there. We have our dogs there. He was married to Sandy Kashudian at the time. And it was the biggest mess you ever saw. So believe it or not.
Did he tell you he was staying?
They had an apartment. We had a 4-year-old son, Ryan. And it's an industrial area in Sun Valley, California. We called it Slum Valley. A lot of kennels there. Woody Warnell lived there. So anyway, a year later, Rick moved. Rick and Sandy moved to Louisiana. And I actually, as much hell as I put Birgit through by making her go through all that, and Marippi and Birgit got very close, and I do believe they were planning on buying a gun and killing him, and maybe two, me too.
Great.
It was unbelievable. But what a lesson. You know, Larry Downey was a great teacher, but Rick, in his own right, is a great teacher. He's a great trimmer. And he can explain things just beautifully so you could really understand them. He just had a gift of gab, and he could do that. And he was willing to do that. So that was a very big positive in my life, and in actual Birgit's life too, but even though she hated him and she was impossible to live with at that time, she got better once he moved. Yeah, we had a pretty good life for a while there, quite a while. But you know, there's stories I could tell you, but anyway, we're still trying to get down to how I got into the business and what happened.
This is great. Just keep rolling.
And Rick, I have to give him credit. He was a great teacher, and he taught me a lot. And we, Berger and I, we lived there for 20 years. We worked out of that place, and it was, we cleaned it up. Believe me, we cleaned it up. And it was just like Rick said, you know, it was a gold mine. In pet grooming, did a lot of pet grooming. And this I was taught from Larry, because I did pet grooming there. Boarding, he did anything he could to make money, because at the time, the AKC and the PHA, not the PHA, the American Kennel Club controlled handlers. You had to, number one, have a kennel. And that actually turned out to be a godsend for me. You know, we did everything that the AKC, which was Len Brumby, controlled it. We did everything that he said. You know, he even told me one time, I want you to wear a blue coat and tan pants. And I did it. So, but anyways, then they, PHA was going to sue, or actually it was Rick. They were going to suspend, and the PHA got behind him, and that's when Bob and Jane were ahead, or Bob was head of the PHA at the time, and the AKC threw up their hands and said, okay, we're not going to have any more control over professional handlers. And I thought, well, that's very good. That's very good. But it turned out it wasn't very good, you know, because, you know, there was an apprentice program in the day. Now, we're, you know, we're talking from the 60s, and they stopped about the late 70s, early 80s is when the AKC gave up and said, no more licensing handlers and licensing assistants.
I think we wouldn't with the qualifications they had back then, we probably wouldn't have half the handlers we have now.
No. And, well, the main thing is that, you know, so many of them work out of their garage now. That's not a good deal, you know. By keeping the kennels, and by the way, when all this stopped, the AKC, you know, a lot of people sold their kennels. Mm-hmm. You know, that's where a lot of them could have retired on the money that, you know, with inflation, that those kennels became, with that property alone, kennel property alone in Los Angeles, very difficult to get and very expensive. Sure. So we pretty much stayed the way old school type stuff. And, you know, they used to talk about old school when I was young, and I think, oh, you're crazy. But believe me, it helped. And it, I actually think the AKC should get back into watching it, because I don't see as many things, bad things happening as I did in the 60s. But I'm sure there's some going on. You know, I don't know what's happening. So nonetheless, we worked hard. You know, we were a good team. You know, what Birgit did was, she was the opposite of me. She did books. She was organized. And she taught me a lot. And the one thing she really taught me was saving money. So, and during that time, we had a lot of good people, a lot of kids coming in from Japan and Scandinavia.
Lots of assistants.
Really some good ones. They came there because they wanted to learn, like I did. I mean, I went there, I worked for $40 a week for 3.5 years, never asked for a raise, and they never thought about giving me a raise either. But I went to learn. So, and that's what a lot of them did, you know, and there's been a lot of successful ones. You know, Greg Strong is a good businessman. He works hard. He runs, you know, he's a good, solid person. He comes to mind, but there's dozens more. And, Marippe, she started working for us right after college. She was cutest, prettiest little girl you ever saw. And funny, she could keep me laughing. I mean, she kept me laughing every day. I mean, she was the highlight of my day most of the time, till the end, which wasn't a real happy ending, but no endings are, I guess. It's not in this business. But I would say that, you know, as we were learning, and she went through the Rick Kashoudian experience, and she saw this, and things were wild in the day with us. I mean, it was nonstop all the time. And but I would make her really the best assistant that we ever had. And I think she worked there for 5, maybe 6 years. I handled dogs again out of Arizona, which is very difficult. The driving would drive you crazy, and you know, the truck that I had to have 2 generators and 3 air conditioners on it, because you would go from Phoenix, Arizona, where it's 114 degrees, to Houston, Texas, where it's 105 degrees with humidity, and you'd have 25 dogs in this truck and 4 employees. Yeah. And I lived in fear of a flat tire getting stuck out in the middle of the desert, and or the motor going out. So we, you know, took very good care of those trucks, and knocked on wood, we never had any problems. And Birgit did too. She took very good care of those trucks. And, you know, we were always putting new tires on them because I just hated changing tires. So I always thought of the worst case scenario and tried to avoid that.
And great planning. A lot of us don't do that, that's for sure.
Yeah, yeah. I ran out of gas once, and that's the last time I ever ran out of gas. That's a pain in the neck, too.
Sure.
Yeah, I get those stories until you'd go, you know, you'd be sick of listening to them, but we'll try and bypass it and just get this history going. So anyways, I moved here and I finally bought a piece of property that I had known about because I was raised here. It was a real rundown dump, but it had a license. You know, a kennel license is very hard to do, and it was grandfathered in, and I bought it, and I spent more money on attorneys keeping it a kennel because it's in a residential area, and it's in a very exclusive city in Paradise Valley where you have to have an acre to have a house, and they don't want businesses in that town, and then long story short, the city, after years, became very, very good to me after a 2-year lawsuit because I did what I promised them I'd do. I told them I would make it beautiful, and I did. So the kennel, I don't think you really want to hear so much about. It's just the history. I showed the dogs out of here, you know, and it's very fortunate. Both of us were very fortunate. We got good dogs. We got good clients. Good clients are very important, as you know, and good dogs are important. I mean, it was a period of time there when we were in California that Birgit and I were both, I mean, we were golden, and we had more clients than we could, but most of the clients just finally left. I couldn't find them dogs that I wanted to show. Mm-hmm. And they would go by the wayside. I think of the potential these people had, the mere fact that they had the interest, they wanted to spend the money, and they wanted a good dog. And
hard to find.
I'm sorry?
That's hard to find nowadays.
It is nowadays. But seriously, I mean, I guess that was in the golden days of the dog shows. You know, I think about it. I mean, there was a lot of interest in dogs. This was when Santa Barbara was beautiful, and Beverly Hills was beautiful, and the Chicago International was the great Chicago International, and Westminster, and da 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 da. You know.
Great.
So.
A few weeks ago, I interviewed Kenny Murray, and he touched on you quite a bit. Can you tell me how you two met? You guys became so close?
Yeah. I can't tell you everything. It was some of them.
Of course not. We don't want to know.
I met him on the Texas circuit, and he's my age, and he really did have the same interests I do. He had the same drive, and I was showing a Labrador. The dog was a gift to me from Larry. It was a bitch, the pick of the litter. The people couldn't afford the board bill, and we got it. And the bitch was this. The dog was sired by Shamrock Acres Light Brigade, and his name was Hillsboro Wizard of Oz. And the story with him was, we went on the circuit, and we were on the circuit, and I got to know Ken, and on that circuit, it was 10 shows. I finished that dog undefeated in the breed from the glasses. Now, that's hard to do with a Labrador. It'd be much harder to do today than it was then. But in that circuit, I got a second in the group under Phil Marsh and a second in the group under Annie Clark, you know, showing him myself. And pretty soon, Ken was, he was following us to the shows. And then pretty soon I was riding with him, following them, you know, and in the day, every show was the Texas circuit. You drove after every show, you know, you got there, you fed, you exercised, you got all set up. You went to bed at 1 o'clock in the morning. You got up at 6 o'clock or 5 o'clock in the morning because you had to be there at 6. And, So we stayed in touch. I talked to him all the time on the phone. Then we'd go down to Texas, and he had a limited in the day. They gave limited handler's licenses, and he had a limited handler's license. And I said to him, I said, you know, you got to work for a handler. You know, you can't do this just from pure love or drive. I mean, some people have, but it doesn't work for most of them. So I got him a job. I talked him into working for Dick Cooper. And this was when Larry and Alice were quitting. And Dick Cooper had a guy by the name of Harry Hayes that was working for him, and he was leaving. And I said, you know, please come and work for this guy, or, you know, help you. So, okay, he went there, and I said to him, I said, you know, he's got a daughter, and she's a little bit sketchy, and don't get near this girl. I mean, she's a little difficult. And so, long story short, well, 3 months short, she's pregnant, 3 months, right? So Ken doesn't listen to me. and then you want to talk about the apprentice of all time, you end up working for him for 12 years.
Yeah.
Anyways, that was fun and interesting, and it was good, you know, that when he moved there, then I had somebody to pal around with. We talked about dogs. That's all we talked about, with dogs, which is good. We both had the same interest. And again, let me go back to Burger real quick. That was our interest also. You know, I was very fortunate that I found Birgit, because we did have the same interest, the same drive, and all that sort of thing. And same thing with Ken. So then I think Ken already had two children, and then Birgit and I moved to California because I was going to jump off a roof. And I'm repeating myself. So Ken is a lot of fun, and I still hang out with him, and that's all we talk about are dogs, stories until they make you sick. And and I always tell people, you know, I got him his job, his first job. If he did anything right, it was because of me. Nothing to do with Mick Cooper or anybody else.
You basically started as a Samoyed. What is your favorite breed now?
You know, people always ask me that. It really depends on the dog.
Yeah.
You know, the dog. I fall in love with dogs all the time. And I've been very lucky, and probably my favorite dog he's my best story in dogs, and my biggest heartache in dogs was my wife, Fox Terrier, George.
George, yeah.
And
I was working for Bobby Stebbins the year you came on the Florida circuit. I think you won like every Bastion show. I can't remember.
I think I missed two of them. But I think there were, what, 9 shows, and he won 7.
Yeah, Bobby would always send me to watch you. Go watch Clay, show a wire.
Well, that was a great dog. I mean, really, it was probably, I would say, one of the two really great dogs that I ever showed. And he was such a wonderful dog to show. And then one of the biggest, hardest things for me to learn, and it took me too long to learn it, because I'm going through this huge problem, and I don't understand it, and I don't know why, and I'm blaming everybody else. But what he had was petite mal seizures. He was starting epilepsy, and then eventually he had grand mal seizures, and you could see it. So that was very sad, but probably the greatest win that I ever had in dogs, the most fun win, or the most hardest win, was winning the breed at the Garden when Peter had Galsel Excellence out. And he was number one dog on breeds, and And then the following night, joining Progressive Show, he was in a seizure when he walked into the ring, and I literally was just holding him up, and that was the worst. But Blossom and my Lakeland bitch, she was so much fun.
Oh, yeah. You remember Mrs. Whitmore up here, Eve Whitmore?
Do I what?
You remember Eve Whitmore, the judge? She loved that bitch. She talked about that bitch all the time.
Did she?
Yeah.
Canada has some good judges. They really do. I can't say how much I like Jimmy Reynolds and Daniel Lynn and a few others. But those two come to mind. And then we'll see.
We talked about terriers. Mrs. Whitmore always brought up that bitch.
Really?
Yeah.
She was fun.
She was.
She was a house pet. She really was. She was one of the first house pets that I had as a dog. And the reason for that is, when I came to work for Larry, let's go back to that story, and I had my dog, Sam, my Samoyed Sisko, and he said, "What is that?" And I said, "Well, that's my dog." And he said, "Do you see all these dogs in this kennel?" He says, "They're all your dogs when they're here.
Yeah.
Get rid of them." And I did. I gave him to an uncle that had lived in Illinois, and he had a good life on a farm.
Sure.
But I say that to help all the time when they come up with their dog. "Do you see all these dogs in this kennel? They're all yours." Love them. And I'll take an example of that. You may not know Bernie Kush. Bernie Kush was a standard schnauzer breeder and a Kerry breeder. And she had a dog named Callahan, a Kerry, that she'd been showing. And she brought him, and I said to her, "Do you see all these dogs in this kennel? They're all yours. Get rid of them. Collecting dogs is a bad habit." I was taught that. Which that can easily happen. You can collect dogs all day. And if you're going to be in the business and you're supposed to be making a living in it, you need to take care of your clients' business, your clients' dogs, and worry about them. You don't have time to worry about your own dogs. And it works out just as well, believe me. But anyway, she let that dog go to England, and there's kind of a sad story. He went best in show crufts. The people kind of, according to her, stole the dog from her. And then I'm pretty sure that the super dog Kerry that Bill McFadden showed came dog down from that dog twice. And I love that Kerry. I thought that was a great dog. But it's the way it's supposed to be, I guess. You know, the dog did great things for the breed, this Callahan, and she blamed me for making her get rid of the dog, things like that. That's one of the stories we talk about doing that. But we're talking about professional handlers. That's one of the things. That's the way and the kind of things I was taught.
Yeah.
You're taking care of your clients' dogs, and they are your own dogs while they're in your care.
Very true.
That story, which is history of my life. When I start talking, I get off on the different
side. It's great, though. Are there any dogs that you wish you'd been involved with over the years? Wish you had shown?
Well, as I just mentioned him, the carry of that Bill had.
Yeah, Mick.
Yeah. When I was quitting that year, that was in 2000 or 99, and I saw the dog at Devon. And I was really taken with him, and I never put my hands on him, but I watched somebody go over him one time. I watched him go, put their hand from his neck all the way through his shoulders, all the way through his tail and back porch and everything else. And I thought, wow, it really is a big dog. But then, you know, Bill McFadden is a talent. You know, in the day and in the days when I showed, I showed a lot of Carries, and a lot of them in the 70s and 80s were crazy, just crazy. They get into the ring, they start fighting, they start vomiting, that white foam that came out of them, you know. And but Bill, the last two Carries that I saw him show our campaign, they were stand-up show dogs, which is the way I preach today about terriers. I don't like it when people spar them, because, you know, I've had to spar dogs just because you didn't really want to see them, you know. It's the only way you can make them look good. But nowadays, it's the whole terrier world has changed in the fact that terriers have to do, and they are, for the most part, people are getting smarter. They have to do what a Doberman does. They have to do what a boxer does. And, you know, they have to do what the dog is, stand-up show dog. It shows on their own. And you, this business of sparring them drives me crazy. I try never to spar terriers. I don't like it. You know, it destroys some dogs. It makes some dogs look very good for just 1 minute. And what do you have when you have a dog that's looks absolutely fantastic sparring? And then he goes around the ring and he, you know, looks like a ride at Disneyland or something. It's just ridiculous, you know. So, you know, you think, oh, wow, I'm going to put that dog over. Let's stick him around. And like, oh, no, now I got to rejudge this class, you know. So I try not to spar dogs. And I'm one of the few terrier people that do. But no, terriers can be shown like all the rest of the other breeds, and they can be stand-up show dogs. So.
What year did you start judging then? You retired in...
I wasn't going to judge. Huh?
You retired in 1999 or 2000?
About 2000, actually. Okay. But I wasn't going to judge, and I think in probably 2002 or 2003. And it was Ken Murray. He calls me. He says, if you're going to judge, this is the last time that you can get 26 breeds. At the time, and you know, they change that all the time, but you can get 26 breeds. And I said, all right, I'll try it. So I applied for 26 breeds, and I applied for dogs I liked or dogs I felt comfortable with in all 26, or, sorry, in all seven groups. And I had 13 working dogs, because I wanted to get the working group first. I did not want the terrier group, because if you're going to judge terriers, especially in the beginning, and you get like into the certain areas up in the Dakotas and the Midwest and Deep South, and sometimes long time of the year, you know, you'll get 25 terriers. You know? It's not worth going there. So I wanted the working group, and I finished all my provisionals fast, and I applied for the working group, and let's see, they must have had, because I could get 13 more, and I had 26, well, they added three more breeds to it, and the AKC gave me those three breeds also, so they actually gave me 17 breeds the second time, and then I had the working group, and the AKC has been very good to me. You know, I tried my best, tried to keep the nose clean, which isn't easy for me. And they've been good. I have no problems. It's been like I'd go 4 or 5 years without applying for dogs, you know, any more breeds. My kennel, I built a huge kennel. You know, got interested in that. As a matter of fact, when I built it, I didn't plan on quitting handling. It just became so lucrative that I thought, well, I would prefer to stay home and pick up poop and go to these dog shows that were driving me crazy at the time. You know, and help wasn't as easy to find in those days. It really wasn't. You know, I mean, towards the end there, I had some really good guys. One of them was Jorge. Mm. Jorge was excellent job. Another one was Chewy. You know Chewy in Texas?
No.
Texas. Oh, what's his name? I only call him Chewy. Anyways, he was good. I had several at the end there, but I was at the last two dog shows that I made as a handler. And I had Jorge had quit, Vicky had quit, they all got out on their own, and someone else quit. And I had one good kid, two others that had worked for me, there had been some dog shows that were okay, and then a new kid that had just come from Mexico to become a handler. Okay. He brought a camera with him, and that he got to the dog show, and that's the last I ever saw him. He's out taking pictures of everything, and that was it. That was so disgusting, and I had a full load of dogs. I won 7 groups in 2 days, went best in show the first day, and I didn't win the group with that dog the second day, but I still won 7 groups. And I'm driving home, and I'm thinking, you know, and it was just such an exasperating weekend for me. And I'm thinking, you know, I think I'd just rather stay home and pick up poop and go through this mess. And that's what I did. he asked me about judging. And Ken called me a couple years later and said, you better do it now. And I said, okay. And I thought, well, I wouldn't know if I'd like judging or not. And judging, by the way, is on-the-job training also. You may think you know about dogs. You may know about dogs, and you may have read that standard 20 times, but you really have to judge each individual breed. And it's best if you judge them around the country so you can see what each part of the country has to offer, because it's not always the same.
Yeah.
You know, you can get Labradors in one area, for example, and get some fabulous dogs. Enjoy it. I mean, like, it's fun to judge them. You know, in the next week, you could be doing 30 Labradors in somewhere else. I won't say where. And it's like, oh my God, this is painful. So, but it is, it's something I don't know what a lot of people think about, but it's you really have to do it. When I first started judging, and I still do when I judge, you know, it's like, oh my God, can I get 5 minutes off to read this standard again, you know? But again, you learn. That's the way you learn, is on-the-job training. And don't tell me anybody ever started judging, went out there and didn't go, oh my God, what did I get myself into? You know, it takes a while to understand it and to get the feel for it. And when you're judging a lot, there was a point there where I was judging 40 weekends a year, you know, you get into the groove. And you know, and then a lot of the things that help you as being a handler, and it helps if you want to be helped, is the fact that you get people that say things to you, and you, it's in code. You know what they're saying to you. And, you know, they're pimping this dog, and you know that. You know, it's like, you know, don't piss on my boots and tell me it's raining, brother. I've done this for 40 years. You know. I waited behind poles and waited for those judges to walk around there, and so I could start up a conversation and get my quote unquote code in there. So the only reason for judging that I can see that anybody would want to do is that it is definitely a challenge.
Yeah.
And it's challenging. And it only benefits me, the judge. It only benefits the judge, and the fact that you can walk out of there and say, wow, I really thought I did a good job today. But on the other hand, I've also walked out of there and goes, man, I screwed that up. Why did I do that? You know, it's just the way it is, I guess.
I think that's natural, you know, second guess yourself sometimes.
Right, right. You know, it used to be I knew who was a good judge. I knew who was a crook. I knew who was everything, and that's the way I treated them. You're a crook? Okay, you want to be a crook? I'll take care of you. You know, you want to be a good judge? I'll give you all the respect in the world. You know, so. But it's different. And actually, as I'm judging, there are some people that are actually really good judges out there. Really good. And then there's a few that I don't think I'll ever learn. You know?
Some people just don't have it, right? They can't.
So, right. Okay, next question.
All right. If you had to, who would you like to have dinner with in dogs of dog people that have passed? Who would you wish you could still speak?
Let's start with Lang Scarta. I thought he was the most complete, down-to-earth gentleman in the business.
Yeah.
And he pulled no punches. You know, if he was judging a dog and there were 20 people in the ring and they could all stand there, and he would say to you, okay, Will, take this dog down and back. Okay, Will, take the dog around. Okay, it's not like it's, I got to pretend I don't know you. And then he could still judge the dogs, right?
Oh, for sure.
I used to love that. And the fact that he just absolutely was not phony about nothing. He was down to earth. You could talk dogs to him. And he had some great stories. I had dinner with him many times, and I loved him. And the same thing with Annie Clark. She didn't say, take him down, Clay. Take the dog down and back, Clay. Go around, Clay. But she had another way about her. Kind of more grandiose, but I loved and respected her. One of the people that I really should mention that did so much for Birgit and I was Winnie Heckman. She really was on our side and really did a lot for us. Annie was also. There was another judge I wanted to talk about that would like to go to dinner with. Jimmy Reynolds is very interesting when we go to dinner with him. He's fun. But he's still around, so we need to find somebody that's not here anymore.
Yeah.
Let's go with those. You know, Lang and Annie and Winnie. And Winnie was, she was hilarious. What she did was more than anything. She just really liked Birgit and I and really helped us a lot, promoted us, sent us dogs with good clients. So I have a great deal of appreciation for her.
Yeah, we all need those people. Those are far and few between again. When I was showing dogs, I remember I was a young handler and Lang was judging, and I had a very famous Irish setter up here. He just retired and brought a new dog out. Lang was doing the specialty. He's talking. He always chatted to me and called me Will. He asked me, is this related to your old dog? And I said, I was just being cocky. I said, he was. And I said, yeah, of course you are. Right? He gives me opposite sex. He told me he didn't never like my old dog. I'll never forget that.
That kind of honesty is good. You know, that's a famous story. He and Harry Sangster were very close. They were betting on a basketball game or a football game or something like that. And they bet $100. And this, again, was in the 60s. You know, $100 was a lot of money. So Lang is in Yuma, Arizona, and he gives Harry first in the class, and this is with a Doberman, and this is in the day where Dobermans were a big breed in the mid 60s and 70s. And, you know, there's nothing to have 40, 50 Dobermans. So Lang gives him the blue ribbon, and Harry Sangster hands him the $100 bill in the frame. He says, thanks, Lang. And there's 100 people standing around there watching this. You know, you couldn't get away with this today.
No.
But you had to know Lang, you know. And Lang goes, oh, don't do that. So, by the way, I just thought of something. I just remembered something. My first time I ever showed in junior showmanship, my first dog show, George Payton.
Oh.
He was the judge.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And before he started, I went now around and watched the handler that was going to do this. So I followed him around because you knew a couple hours earlier who was going to be the judge. So he gets this ribbon, he gets this best of breed, and he's standing there talking to the judge, and the dog goes to lift his leg, the judge's leg. And George caught him. Just, and they make a time. And he made the sign of the cross. He's, oh my God, he got out of that. But I just thought, well, this guy's kind of funny, and he should be fun to show her. And I mean, again, I'm only like 13 years old. And I still thought that was funny. And I never forgot it. And that's, you know, that's 1961 or 62. So not many people know who George Payton is either, do they?
No, that's for sure. Yeah. They had a trivia question up here about George, and it was, he had won the toy group of the garden with an IG. Nobody knew that up here. I did.
Really?
Yeah, he won it in like 1963, I think he won the toy group of the garden.
I knew that because I had every dog magazine there was. Now I get those things and I can barely open them. But that's all I thought about when I was a kid.
Me too. I used to have we used to have newspapers up here. Dogs of Canada was a newspaper, and I used to spend my time circling the dogs I liked, and I would pick best dog on page. You know,
sacrificial. You were a judge already.
Yeah. So, you were a great handler and you're a great judge. Do you have any advice for a young person that wants to do the sport of dogs as a living?
Well, the first thing you want to tell people, because nobody told me how much work it is if you're going to do it. The second thing is keep it a business. I mean, that's probably the one thing that has helped me in my whole life is that I kept it a business. Don't give it away. I'll tell you, Forrest Hall, do you remember Forrest Hall? Forrest Hall told me.
Who he is.
Forrest Hall told me, he signed my handler's application. He and Dick Cooper signed my handler's application. He said, be nice. He said, but not too nice. He says, or they'll walk on you.
Yeah.
Now, on the other hand, today's a different world. I could have been nicer. You know, I went into a funky time in my life, and I got just a little bit too irritating to people. I got a little bit too arrogant to top of things, which I, probably the worst thing I ever did was I wasn't either raised well enough, I hate to say the word, but I actually didn't have enough class not to be arrogant. You know, be more of a politician, like, you know, look at, I mean, not like Trump, but be like more like of a politician, be like a normal politician. but yeah, I would say don't be arrogant. Just don't be arrogant. Take care of your dogs. Take care of business. Send your bills out, okay? And then if they want to know, I made plenty of mistakes. I could tell them stuff that I did that I wish that I had never done. And I wish that I had never said. And, you know, that stuff comes back and you think about it years later and you think, God, I wish I hadn't done that. Or God, I wish I hadn't said that. Or God, I wish I had done this. You know, if I'd have done that, you know, actually, this has nothing to do with it. But you know, as I said, when I was quitting and Carrie, I had some kind of was told about this dog before Phil got it. This Mick, that Carrie, I thought, God, if I kept handling and I had that dog, then I'd be stuck for another 3 years showing dogs. But there's a lot I could tell people. You know, be humble and don't be arrogant and have some class. And I must say, the whole business has changed. you know, when I judge dogs, absolutely amazes me the grace, the attitude, and the professionalism that some of these handlers have today. And I wish that I had that. I really do. I wish, you know, that I had, if I had known that this is what you really needed to do, I could have done a lot better. And I did well enough. But the world has changed. The dog world has changed in particular. And it's too late. But yeah, and as a matter of fact, I do tell people all the time. You know, people that ask me, not that they work for me or anything like that, but like, you know, what does it take? What would you do? Da 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 da. I help anyone. I was taught that. That was one of the things they taught you. You give back. You help. You help other people.
You kind of answered my next question, though. What advice would you give 20-year-old Clay Cody if you could talk to him now?
That's it.
Yeah. Already answered it for me.
Be humble and be careful what you say, because it may come back to haunt you. You know, don't be arrogant. That's what I would tell them. And keep it a business. As I said before, that's very important. Okay.
This has been great, Clay. I really appreciate this.
Thanks for asking. I was actually very afraid to do this because I've never Zoomed before. This is the first time. I tell everybody I Zoomed with Will, you know.
No, but it was great. I really enjoyed this interview. Thanks so much, and I won't keep you any longer, but that was great, Clay. I really appreciate it.
All righty. Thanks for asking, Will. We'll see you down the road.
Yeah, I'm sure we'll see you somewhere. It was great to see you.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Well, thank you, Clay. That was a very good interview. I'm sure everybody found it interesting and fascinating at the same time. If you like what we're doing here, make sure you press the like, share, and subscribe button. And don't forget, if you want to get a hold of me, you can get a hold of me at dogshowtips@gmail.com. And if you want to find out what's happening in Will's world, go to willalexander.net. And one more plug, if you want to find out about all my grooming seminars and grooming courses, go to Leading Edge Dog Show Academy. Thanks, guys. Talk to you soon.